This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The future of U.S. interest rates. Plus, what if Goldman Sachs became a kind of PayPal, just a click away for any Tom, Dick, and Harriet? From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. With Janet Yellen at the helm, the guardians of interest rates will meet Tuesday and Wednesday to again discuss what to do about U.S. interest rates. After dropping the federal funds rate to near zero back in 2008 to try to juice up the economy, the Fed has now raised rates just once, back in December, by 0.25%. Fed governors have signaled more rate hikes are in the cards. It's not clear when. From the Marketplace desk at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Mitchell Hartman reports.
The world economy was kind of a mess early this year. China in trouble, oil crashing, U.S. exporters hurting. But Dan Heckman at U.S. Bank Wealth Management says the way is now clear for the Fed to start raising rates again to keep inflation in check and the economy from overheating.
China especially has been better. Commodity prices may have bottomed with oil above $40. We're almost at full employment here at the 5% level, starting to see maybe some signs of wage pressure.
Elise Gould at the Economic Policy Institute is skeptical, though, that the Fed should be raising rates to fight inflation now.
I'm not seeing any acceleration in inflation, no acceleration in wages. You know, having a very low inflation economy has problems, right? So people are still trying to get out from under a lot of their household debt. If people's wages went up with inflation, that might help.
The Fed governors may not act this week, but they are likely to act soon. They don't want to raise rates too close to the November election and be accused of playing politics with their monetary policy. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Goldman Sachs is opening up to the masses. After acquiring an online banking unit from General Electric, the Wall Street titan, one of the top names in wholesale finance, is letting regular people open a retail bank account at what's called the GS Bank. GS equals Goldman Sachs, of course. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins us now live. Nancy, why would GS want to get into retail banking?
Well, David, Goldman Sachs, as you said, has always been known as more of an investment bank for the super rich. But federal regulators have been trying to nudge the big investment banks to rely more on deposits for cash. They're seen as a more stable way of raising money than, say, bonds. Goldman says it acquired $8 billion in online deposits and another $8 billion in brokered certificates of deposit through its deal with GE Capital Bank. Now, Goldman's earnings haven't been so great lately, David, and revenue for the first quarter of this year was down about 40% from the same time last year. So Goldman needs more sources of revenue.
But remind us why GE got rid of its online bank.
Well, GE Capital, that's General Electric's financial wing, had real trouble during the financial crisis that hurt the rest of the company. And also, GE has been labeled as a systematically important financial institution by regulators, which means it's subject to more regulation. It really wants to get rid of that label, and so it's starting to sell off some of its financial units.
Quickly, anything in this for consumers?
Well, a good interest rate, a little more than 1%, but that is just for a savings account, so keep that in mind.
Nancy, thank you. What I'd like to live long enough to see someday is a Goldman Sachs drive-through teller. Here's how you can demolish a piece of conventional wisdom with a sprinkling of some data. The Wall Street Journal has a piece today showing the way more Apple iWatches were sold in their first year than the wildly successful iPhone was in its first year on the market. On now to an unanswerable question that affects both what you eat and what you pay to eat. The great mystery is this. What does the word artisanal really mean? We're not naive enough to believe that there really is an artisan with an artistic vision crafting foods labeled artisanal. So then what? Marketplace's Annie Baxter looked into this.
The artisan craze has been going on for a few years now, so much so that it's gotten spoofed plenty. Like this video, where a couple of Brooklynites handmake artisanal spam.
The first successful one was the sriracha pickles, so that was great. And the lemongrass and coconut oil. That's going really well with so many Asian dishes.
A survey by the firm Kennedian showed many consumers do associate artisan with things like unique taste, high-quality ingredients, and products made by hand.
Well, a lot of companies would like to make you think that their products are handmade.
Kennedian's Tom Vierheil says when the term artisan showed up on menus at big chains like Pizza Hut and Panera, it stopped meaning something special. Why do big chains use it? Vierheil says to charge more for their products and to look like authentic small food producers.
What's prevailing in the marketplace right now is the view that big is bad and small is good.
For us, artisan means we really took a lot of time sourcing and testing and trying to pair really great flavors, ingredients together.
Sarah Danforth is with the food company GNP, which is launching artisan chicken sausages. Flavors include bacon gouda and hickory smoked apple. The sausages are free of preservatives and artificial flavors. Danforth says the word artisan helps convey that clean label.
Yeah, I think it's a great term to wrap all of the benefits into one.
What would you say to someone who is skeptical of that vocabulary coming from what is not a mom-and-pop shop?
You know, I think what they should do is give them a try.
Food industry consultant David Garfield at Alex Partners thinks it is defensible for big food companies to call products artisan when they have used different equipment or ingredients to make them.
If they are willing to match the consumer's definition and test of authenticity, they can be successful.
But he admits that definition often boils down to, you know it when you see it. I'm Annie Baxter for Marketplace.
Also, if you missed our piece the other morning about the economics of chefs' tasting menus, it's just a couple clicks away by putting the keywords tasting menus into marketplace.org. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.